Hello, everybody. Recording live from somewhere.
Lord of mercy. All night, Sunday, Central. Follow me now. Listen, say hi, take it, you're rolling hip hop. Say J-Roll, just you're rolling hip hop. Redefinition, say you're rolling hip hop.
Hello and good morning, Kansas City. Happy Saturday. I'm Alex Gross, joined by Blake Schneiders, who's running the boards. And we're here with you for the next 2 hours, talking all the sports here in KC Mo. Blake, how's it going, my friend? Guess what? This
what?
Is an exciting day because.
Is it?
We know that our schedule is the exact same next Saturday. That hasn't happened in a long time.
That has not happened in forever. And it's rare that I now have a Saturday, 9 to 11, and a Sunday, guess what? Same time, different person, 9 to 11 with Josh Briscoe. So that's 2 weeks back that they're going to be back-to-back for us, which, again, hasn't happened since, I don't even remember when, months? Months
long. It'll probably be short-lived only because March Madness is coming up. Big 12 tournament, SEC tournament, who knows what games will be running here on Sports Radio 810. We've always got great ones here on your home for just about everything that you could ever need and want in the sports world. So might be short-lived, but hey, still something to look forward to. You can mark your calendar. You can do that right now. So go ahead, hop on, whether you use a pen, you're more of a pen-to-paper kind of person, or you keep it all on your phone or your computer, go ahead and book 9 to 11 next Saturday, because we will be right back here doing the same thing. So, Blake, we've got a jam-packed first hour here on the show. We're going to get into some headlines with all of the local sports here in Kansas City, talk about some of the news that came down this week, and we'll also talk some of the craziness going on in the NFL right now with talks of quarterbacks on the move, free agency ramping up, and as we get closer to the 2021 NFL draft, what moves the Chiefs could be making, might be looking to make when that all comes about. So we'll get into some of that here on the show. Then in hour two, we've got a back-to-back get to know Casey Woso special. As many of you know, Kansas City getting a pro women's soccer team back here in the city that is so, so passionate about soccer. So a perfect fit. I know so many people, including myself, were disappointed to see the team leave in 2017. I had literally just moved to Kansas City when that happened, so I didn't even get a chance to enjoy it when it was here. But I've heard from so many of you who, you know, were either fans of that team, feel like you didn't appreciate it enough when it was here, wish that you had gone out to more games. The chance for redemption is upon us because KCNWSL is here to, I mean, dedicated ownership group that wants to keep it here for as long as possible. So really exciting season coming up. And to get ready for the season, we're going to get to know the players a bit better. So Get to Know Casey Woso is a little series that I'm doing leading up to the Challenge Cup, leading up to the regular season. So we will talk with defender Michelle Maimon and goalkeeper Abby Smith in our number two. But Blake, this is also a good Saturday if you are a Missouri fan, because no game, which is disappointing because, hey, who doesn't love to watch their team play a little college hoops on the weekend? But it's good news because now Missouri can't lose a game like they did to Ole Miss. So
yeah, so I don't have to sit there and watch a loss happen. And honestly, I feel good about that because the last 3 weeks has been kind of a nightmare if you're a Mizzou fan.
Yeah. No, it's and here I was so naive to think that, okay, their final stretch of the season, no ranked opponents. This is a good opportunity for Missouri to just kind of finish the season strong. They had an all team meeting after their loss to Georgia, which usually means that, like, okay, this team's going to turn a corner, right? Like, they're about to, like, all team meeting usually leads to good things when it comes to results. That did not end up being the case. A very disappointing loss to Ole Miss. I don't know what it is about this Mississippi team. Got
yeah.
Missouri twice this season.
Yeah, I don't know what. I mean, they had a team meeting and then they come out and, you know, put 93 up on South Carolina with the win, and then turn right around and look like the same old Tigers right before that meeting happened and just, you know, pretty much crapping their hat down the stretch to Ole Miss. And I really don't know what it is about that Ole Miss team, but they just give the Tigers problems.
Well, and it was especially disappointing because they run the 2-3 zone, and Mizzou acts like they've never seen that in their entire lives.
Which, especially when you have a guy like Tillman, you should be able to pick that apart, and they just didn't know how, they didn't know what was going on.
So, hey, look, anyone who watches this Missouri team, we don't need to get into all the details. That game was, it's in the past. They were supposed to play against Texas A&M today, but A&M is still not out of the woods yet with all of their COVID problems. They have been dealing with this since the end of January. And so that game today is off, but Missouri will now play their makeup game with LSU on March 6th. So no game today, but they will have that game added to their schedule. But Blake, before we move on to some of the other topics here in Kansas City and in the sports world, what are your thoughts on this topic? Because I had a good talk on my weekly, not weekly, that is a lie. It is not weekly at all. It is maybe once a month. My podcast with Sterling and Nate Edwards that we occasionally randomly do. It's like, oh, hey, do you guys want to do this real quick? Boom. Great. So not weekly. I lied. But we talked about this because there was a little rumor that was tweeted out by an unverified account with like 900 followers that there is maybe a chance that Konzo Martin to Miami. And I don't know what the market is for Konzo Martin, or if that's even something that Missouri would be looking into. It's literally just a rumor, so there's no reason to actually give it any sort of, we don't need to give it any legs because, again, it's literally nothing more than that. But it does open up perhaps a bigger conversation, and that is, what is Konzo Martin's future at Missouri? Does he have, is the end drawing near? Does athletic director Jim Sterk, can we see the ceiling? Do we kind of know, is there anything, trends, I guess you could say, from Konzo Martin that would indicate, hey, you know, he's done a great job in these areas, but as far as carrying this program to, you know, a national title, maybe not the guy. So Sterling Sterling was advocating that the Tigers should be looking into Bruce Pearl. Nate was more like, hey, 2020 was a weird season. And while the Tigers have had this very unfortunate stretch where they've lost four of their last five games, they've also knocked off some really tough opponents this season and have shown to be a team that can play at a really high level, that can close out games. And, you know, that's one, the players, but it's also, you know, a lot on the coach too. So I think recruiting is still a little bit of a question mark. That was something that was, high on the list of, you know, what Konzo Martin was going to bring to this program. And while, of course, he's had to deal with a lot of injuries with this Tigers team in the last 4 years, I think recruiting's fallen short in a lot of ways for fans. So all of that to say, Blake, do you think that Konzo Martin is the Tigers' choice? Mizzou Athletics, that is their guy for the next, you know, few years? Or is he going to have a couple of years to really prove it? And if things don't start taking a huge turn, maybe they're looking elsewhere.
Well, I think this is actually a very interesting topic, because if you look at the last three teams that Konzo Martin's coached, Missouri State, Tennessee, and California Golden Bears, he only spent three seasons with each one of those teams. He has spent four seasons now with Mizzou. But at the end of this season, Mizzou will be pretty much losing everybody who is a starter right now. They're going to be losing Mitchell Smith. They're going to be losing Drew Smith. They're going to be losing Mark Smith. So all the Smith brothers, they're out. They're going to be losing Jeremiah Tillman. You're not bringing in any all-star recruits that we know of. I mean, they didn't really make a splash at all in the recruiting game.
I think they've got some three-star guys coming in.
Yeah, so I mean, you've got some lower, not lower level, but you've got some mid-tier star recruits coming in to a team that really, other than that, doesn't. I mean, you still have Xavier Pinson, And, I mean, Kobe Brown and Parker Braun, other than that, not a lot of guys that are getting a lot of playing time. If I'm Konzo Martin, of course you'd love to... Of course you'd love to have another opportunity here at Mizzou, but really the road ahead doesn't look too hot for you over the next couple seasons, unless you can really make a splash next season and get some major 4- and 5-star recruits. It doesn't look like a good, a good next 2 to 3 seasons for Mizzou. Probably just run of the mill, probably 500 to sub 500, unless again there's just major strides made in the offseason. So, yeah. Konzo could come back and say, hey, I want to go ahead and make my stake here, and this is where I want to call home. But if you really look at his history, it sounds like he could be looking other places as well, or kind of trying to pick up and go somewhere where he can make an impact immediately. Because, again, like I said, his history tells us he doesn't spend more than 3 seasons at any other school he's been with. Now, granted, that doesn't mean you won't stay at Mizzou. He's been here longer than he has at any other school so far. So, to me, the writing on the wall, Konzo could be out. And I don't know if it's more of the school choice or if it's more of a Konzo choice, or maybe it's a mutual parting of ways. Hey, you kind of ushered out this class of Mizzou guys that you've had for quite a while, but you're not really bringing in anything else. Maybe it's time to part ways, start fresh, get a new identity, everything else. Obviously, I wouldn't like to see Konzo go. I think he's done a good job at Mizzou. I liked his coaching style. And I think he's progressed as a coach since he's gotten to Mizzou. So I would like to see him stay, but to me, I think I'm seeing some writing on the wall that he might be headed out.
I do think he will stay personally, just because there's really no meat to that rumor, and it, you know, there doesn't really seem to be any other legitimate thing out there that would
be much of a draw to him
that he was actually on the way out. But yeah, I Konzo is a Midwest guy. He's got the East St. Louis ties, and you know, he's, like I said, dealt with a lot of injuries to key players throughout his career. I mean, the Porter brother saga is one that needs to, I think, be mentioned very quickly when you're talking about Konzo Martin's coaching career at Mizzou, because that, to put it lightly, fell incredibly short of what the expectation was when those two came in. But, you know, I think what's hard is that this very unusual season with the pandemic and everything was also a season that was considered, because of the experience on this team, one for this Tigers team to capitalize now, to win now. And I don't want to discredit or, you know, not put enough into how difficult this year has been. Coach Bill Self with Kansas talked about this, you know, and Bruce Weber as well. You know, playing in the pandemic and dealing with all the challenges there is not something that is an easy task. Playing without fans, for the most part, you know, in the arena is really tough on people. We'll get a little bit from Whit Merrifield of the Royals here in a little bit on how that was difficult for him last season and for the Royals. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into it, but, you know, I'm curious to see how the Tigers finish out this season, how they do in the SEC tournament, and then getting in to March Madness, kind of where they fall in. And if they can just win their first game of the tournament, I do think they'll make the tournament. Like, something would have to go terribly wrong here in these final games for them to somehow not make it. I'm not necessarily worried about that, but I am very curious to see how they perform in the tournament, because we've seen them rise to the level of the opponent in, you know, against Tennessee, against Illinois, but then we've also seen them kind of fall in a negative way to the level of the opponent when they're playing lesser teams. And so you'd hope that this team is more of the rise to the occasion and, you know, match some of the best talent in the league versus the opposite of that.
So. Yeah, to me, you hit the nail on the head. They have always been a team, especially this season, that says, hey, if you're ranked, we're going to give you our best game. And they seem to pull it out every time. And then you come in and you have a team like Georgia. So I think it's going to be interesting going into, is there something to play for? Is there something on the line? Because with those ranked teams, there's always something on the line. Hey, we get a chance to move up. We get a chance to move up. Now, you should obviously have that mentality when you play a non-ranked team, because you're like, we have the chance to move down. We don't want to do that. So I think with something on the line, we're going to see Mizzou, hopefully. But being a Mizzou fan, you know how it goes. You know how the past seasons have treated us in the NCAA tournament. I remember when we were, I remember when we lost to Norfolk State in the first round. And I couldn't even watch.
Why'd you have to bring that up?
I was on a bus on a mission trip, and I didn't have the TV on, and I could only get, like, slow updates throughout the entire trip, and I didn't even get to watch the game, but my heart was slowly being crushed by words on my phone and the small little updates. So I think I'll chalk it up to a success if we just win the first game. If we get into the tournament, win the first game.
I'm with you.
It's a success to me. Anything after that, I'm happy, but I think the biggest hump for Mizzou right now is getting past the first game.
I could not agree more. That is honestly what, just like you said, what I would consider a success for this Missouri team. So that's what the two of us have on our postseason wish list, and we'll see if that happens. Another big game, though, tonight that did not get postponed or canceled, KU versus Baylor. I just think this is going to be a great game. I don't know, Blake, how you've felt about this Kansas team this year or about the Big 12 in general. I mean, talk about the weirdest week in college basketball for Kansas City. Folks, K-State upsets Oklahoma, and KU and Mizzou drop games that they probably should have won. KU, Texas, and then Mizzou, Ole Miss. But, hey, Kansas State. Way to go, guys.
Kansas State pulled it out. I mean, they were, and I know Briscoe was talking about how KU Twitter ruined his night, but K-State Twitter, on the other hand, was just like, hey, we might as well. And he said the Mizzou Twitter was exactly, they were very self-aware with the demise of what was going on at the end of the season. So it was funny to see it from the perspective through Twitter.
Yeah, because Josh is, I forget where he went to college, but he didn't go to KU, K-State, or Missouri. So he, like, doesn't have this agonizing, you know, fandom where you, like, he roots for the teams because we're covering the teams here.
I think Josh went to the Wichita Culinary Institute, if I'm not mistaken.
He went to some school. I do not remember what the name of it is. Sorry, Josh. But
Northwestern, Poly Sci, Tech State.
Analysis of the one of the, literally could have, maybe, I don't know, could have been one of those. But his analysis of each, you know, local college's Twitter presence was spot on. Missouri is almost like too self-aware to a T. Like, there's no, and that's probably the thing about being a Missouri fan that's good, is like on Twitter when things are happening. Like, I'll never forget the Mizzou LSU football game. And when they had that huge goal line stand to win the game, it was like everyone is very aware that it could either go the Tigers' way or it couldn't. And there's like almost peace knowing that everyone is on the same page that, like, hey, if this doesn't happen, it's going to be okay, because that's just how things go for us most of the time. And if it goes really well, we can get really, really excited about it, but not too high on it. Just appreciate the good moments when they happen, because we've had enough of the opposite happen that we're, again, aware of and willing to accept and aware that that might be the outcome. You know, like, there's no like, oh, they're going to stop this. Like, you know, it's very 50-50. Like, you know, either or could happen, and that's okay, because that's the life of this fan.
Yeah,
you know,
there's not the overconfidence like sometimes we see with KU fans. It's not the overconfidence, but it's also not like the self-loathing, self-hating, like, oh my gosh. It's just almost a very awkward, super self-aware, why is that guy so comfortable with everything? Even when he wins or loses, they're just like, yep, that sounds about right.
It's hey, I will say, though, very excited about the future of Mizzou football. Maybe getting a little too out of the self-aware zone and into the I'm so high on this team and this coaching staff, what they're doing with this program, that I'm most likely setting myself up for disappointment. And I'm okay with it. I think we needed this. It's been time. It's been too long since this level of confidence has been, I guess, like, it's justified almost because of the different moves that Eli's making. So, I'm okay with it. I'm cool with it. But Blake, a couple of more. Are you going to say something?
Nope, go ahead. Sometimes my face just looks like that.
A couple more headlines before we... Blake's always at the ready. Always at the ready to talk. Couple more headlines before we take a quick break and then come back and talk some NFL Chiefs and Royals close out hour number one of the show. But a little bit of soccer news that came down this week. KCNWSL, they continue their training down in Florida. You can make your season ticket membership deposits ahead of the 2021 inaugural season. They've got a friendly game against the Orlando Pride next Wednesday. So that'll be a good test for them. They've been working on more of a tactical side of their game here in this second block of training. So looking forward to just actually seeing this team play. New coaching staff, new identity here that they're building. You know, a lot of players coming from that Utah team, but while some things will be the same, a lot of it will be different. And from talking with different players and with coach, you know, they're all so excited for everyone to kind of see what they've been working on and what they're looking like now compared to what they looked like during their time in Utah, which, you know, something that I've found incredibly, you know, just something that stood out and is something that has been mentioned in some way, shape, or form by just about everyone I've talked to, which is usually the sign, like, that's a good thing. If you're talking, you know, with different players, coaches, and you're kind of getting this same theme, and it's not like a coach speak type thing, or it's not like a kind of, you know, you can't put a lot of stock into it. This is something that I think you can put a lot of stock into, and is something that I think is a good mindset for the team to have going into this season. And that is that they are all very aware that last season they underperformed based on the level of talent that they have. And they've been very open about that, which I think if you're able to acknowledge that, hey, we didn't play to our fullest potential. We didn't, you know, hold ourselves to as high of a standard, and we're changing that this time around. And to hear everyone say that in their own way makes me think that that is going to be a big theme for this team going into this season. So really excited about that. And again, we will talk with Abby Smith and Michelle Maimone in hour number two, just to get to know them better, get to know, you know, what their experience so far has been like in Kansas City with this coaching staff, you know, hear a little bit about their careers early on. Great stuff from both of them. But some Sporting KC news as well. Gianluca Busio getting a new number. He'll be wearing the number 10 this season, which, as many of you know, in the sport of soccer is a huge honor. And a little possible hint that he will be the team's new 10 in the midfield. Not looking like Felipe Gutierrez will be returning after a lot of injury, which is, on one hand, I think in a way disappointing, because fans never got to see Felipe Gutierrez and Alan Pulido out on the field together, which, just seeing what Felipe did in that 2018 season and how he really captivated fans with his talent and just what he added, not just in the midfield for this team, but in the attack as well. I think seeing how that paired with the talents of Alan Pulido would have been really exciting. And I know is something that I thought would surely bring him back, but rumors out there that he's going to sign with his former team. You know, he and Sporting could not work out a new deal, and I get it. You know, Sporting, he's been injured, he's been out all season long, all this last season, and you don't know what a player who's gotten older during that process and who's coming off of a couple of injuries is going to be like. They might be, you know, a shell of the old player that they were. So understand that, but now time for the future to step up. Gianluca Busio wearing the number 10 this season. A big honor for the I think he's like 18 years old. So
Allie, because I am a super novice when it comes to the world of soccer. You are the soccer extraordinaire expert of the foosball league. Why, and for the fans out there who don't know, why is 10 such a big honor in the world of soccer?
So the 10 in the midfield, which is like the, you know, attacking midfielder, it's, you know, one of the most important positions. It's usually one of the better players on the team, and that typically goes along with, you know, you're playing at the 10 wearing number 10. It's just one of those numbers,
kind of a symbolic, like, yeah, this is you are the main centerpiece.
Yes. So it's especially when it coincides with the position that you're playing, because you've got like the attacking player, the central forward is called the 9. You've got the six, which is a defensive midfielder. Typically, like Elie Sanchez, you wear the six, playing at the six. So that's just, again, weird soccer things that when you're looking at the field, it's just like, oh, offense, midfield, defense. But in the midfield, yeah, you've got – but Sporting typically plays with, like, two eights, like box-to-box eights. Like, so their midfield looks like a kind of an upside-down triangle if you're looking at the field from the forward – from the front line back to the defense. They play, you know, a 4-3-3. So they've got their back line with four. Then they've got their midfield that's anchored by a defensive midfielder, which has been played for the last few seasons by Elie. But Busio last season, he was getting a lot of minutes all over the field. He played on the wing for Sporting. He played at the defense, you know, at the D mid spot. He played in one of the attacking midfield roles. So he, you know, in addition to just all the minutes that he got last season that I think will be really beneficial for his development now moving forward, he also got experience playing in a number of different positions around the field, which I think, you know, the more that you can understand what someone else's role is, it like with any sport, if you can understand someone else's role, it helps you, you know, play your spot better because you know where that player is supposed to go. You know what the demands of their position on the field is. So Busio, one of the homegrowns, one of the very promising young players of this Sporting Kansas City club, set for a big season and eventually will probably get a big payday, a big transfer from Sporting to one of the big clubs. He's been linked to Juventus and a number of other, you know, just premier clubs around the world. So bright future for young Boos. And I mean, one of Blake, when I tell you, this is one of the most like mature 18-year-olds I've ever met. Like, I interviewed him for the first time when he was only 15 years old. I'm like, there's no way this kid is 15. Like, just so mature, you just would never know. You would literally never. He was born in 2002, which makes my actual brain want to explode.
Well, I'm 26 and I'm still not mature, so I'm sure it was a great interview. I'm sure finally it was great to work with somebody who has some maturity for once.
No, but this was like literally 3 years ago, and he got his first minutes with Sporting KC2, like the USL team. And I was out at the game, and I interviewed him after, and you know, he's talking about like, you know, he had some nerves going into the game, which is crazy now to think that like he's just a couple years later been starting at the MLS level and playing like significant minutes. But I'm like, oh my God, you're like flashback to 15-year-old Allie. I'm like, we're different 15-year-olds, simply. That's all I can say. But impressive kid for sure. But Blake, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll talk some Royals and we'll talk some NFL and Chiefs as well, right here on Sports Saturday. I reminisce for a spell, or shall I say, think back. Welcome back in to Sports Saturday. Allie Trost, Blake Peters, running the board, dropping some bangers, coming back from break.
Feeling the funky vibe today, kicking it old school.
Love it.
Always that was funky, funky vibes. Sometimes I gotta enunciate a little bit better. Briscoe told me last time, he's like, make sure you enunciate a little better. I was like, sorry, man.
Well, people can interpret it as they'd like to. And as long as you don't have to dump it, then we are good here on the show, on air. We want to follow the rules. Although I will say, I have a very hard time knowing like which words are okay to use on air and which ones aren't. Because like there are some, like, I don't know if you want to say cuss words, because some people wouldn't maybe even consider like ass. Like, you can say that on air. But I'm always like, every single time I'm like, are you sure though?
Or like I you know,
Petro always says it, so I'm like, okay, around. I'm
damn
good.
Damn will get tossed around, you know. There was a time where I didn't even know if that was an allowed, like if you could say, and I forget what exactly it was. I think, I'm not going to say it, but basically I didn't know. So I dumped it anyway. I said, you know what, just for safe measures, I'm going to go ahead and bleep that one. I'm pretty sure it was fine, but just in the context that it was said, I was like, I don't know if that's allowed.
There was, I have accidentally cussed on air one time. I was on the Zone with Jason and Corey. I know.
Oh my, like bad?
But
like bad? Like
not, it happened in a very subtle, it was the S word. So not anything that would be like.
Which one?
Horribly,
stupid.
Like,
no, I'm just kidding. I was trying to, folks, a funny story.
No, funny story. When I was little, I was the oldest, right? So I didn't have like the older sibling to introduce me early on to like some of the things that some of my other classmates or friends were introduced to early from having older siblings. So we were in the car one time and one of my friends, like somehow, and my mom was driving, somehow like the F word got brought up. And I like I was like 8 or 9 and I was like, the F word. I was like, you mean the fight word? Like I literally thought like the F word meant like fight. Like I was.
You scared me. I had my hand over the dump button right there, Allie.
Blake was ready to go. Yeah. As I'm talking about not cussing on air, I'm just going to do it. No cussing on air, which, you know what? It's for the best. This is a kid's show. This
you can check out. Yeah. You can check out me and Allie's podcasts Saturday after this. If you want to hear some actual, you know, some colorful language. No.
So yeah. Well,
I don't know how liberal you guys get on your podcast, but on B-Cut with me and Josh, we have a good time.
There should be like, I wish that we somehow could do, it would just be too much work for the board ops, but like, I wish every show had like an explicit and just like a not explicit version, because sometimes you get into a topic and you really got to use some colorful language to really make your point.
And it's, yeah, I was going to say, sometimes it puts a perfect exclamation point to the point that you're trying to make, especially if you're ranting. And, you know, I thought originally when I got it, and maybe, you know, you can attest to the same, you know, I'm a pretty, you know me, just in general, I'm a colorful person all over the place. So I thought it was going to be a lot harder to be able to flip a switch to not have stuff slip out. But I have, knock on wood, have actually been good. I've never had anything slip out, weirdly enough. And I thought that might be a little harder, but really, for me, it's not. I don't know, you know, I know you are pretty much the daughter of a sailor, pretty much over there. So Popeye's your dad. No, I'm just kidding.
No, I thought it would be harder too, but I mean, I can tell you, I've heard some of the main hosts at 810 just like off air, and I'm like, how do you flip a switch to not say that on air? Like if you're talking 4 hours a day and I hear you all of the other hours of the day, and yet you are so like true professionals here at 810, you would never know.
Yeah.
You'd never know. But I would like to know who people would guess.
Oh, that'd be a good poll. We should do that. Who do you think of all of the 810 hosts has the most sailor-like mouth?
Because I can think of two right now. Beards. Yeah, go ahead and tweet.
No, I'm just kidding.
No. But go ahead and tweet who you think, which main hosts or 810 personalities have the most potty mouth.
Potty language
on during most hours of the day outside of the times that they are on air, because I'd be very interested to know who you think it is, because I don't know, maybe they do a good job of hiding it so that you wouldn't guess. But Blake, some good news in Chiefs Kingdom. This is typically a slower news time for most sports, like most, you know, NFL.
Yeah, NFL Chiefs usually is just getting over. It's kind of a dead period.
But it's becoming more and more of a like 24/7, 365 news cycle. Like it really is, because rumors and speculation gets just as much attention as like legitimate things that are happening. And people get so wrapped up in quarterback moves and free agency and, you know, pre-draft analysis and breaking down film, that there's always something to read. If you are wrapped up in Chiefs or NFL stuff year round, like you're going to find plenty of entertaining and informative content just about any time you look. So we're going to look to bring you some of that right now, starting with the good news. Mitchell Schwartz posted kind of unexpectedly. Like, I don't know about you, but we knew he was dealing with this back injury that kept him out since week six of the season. And we never really got a ton of updates on it from Coach Reed or anyone else going into the playoffs. You know, some questions started coming up like, hey, do you think Mitchell Schwartz is going to be ready to go for the Super Bowl or in the playoffs? And Coach Reed didn't sound too optimistic about that during, you know, at that time. And so it was like, okay, well, you know, the other question then on everyone's mind, if he wasn't ready to go for the playoffs and for the Super Bowl, was, well, does he need surgery? What does the recovery time look like for him with this injury, which we've never really gotten an exact, you know, diagnosis for what exactly he was suffering from. But we got a little bit more clarity this week because Mitchell Schwartz posted a photo, I believe on Wednesday, that he was getting surgery and was looking forward to next season, you know, getting back and everything. So it's like, okay, well, it looks like Mitchell Schwartz is coming back, which I don't know. I think it had gotten to a point where people were like, well, you know, is he getting close to retirement? Like, is what's going on with Mitchell Schwartz? We just had a lot of questions. So we got that answer. And then his wife, Brooke, posted her Instagram story that same day that they were in Dallas for what was, quote unquote, a spinal surgery, and that it would be a quick recovery time, and that they had been hoping that he would be okay to go for the playoffs, which is why they put off the surgery to begin with, which makes sense. And he had been doing daily treatments, but, you know, never got to a point where he was good enough to go for a, you know, real game at any point. So that was the update on Mitchell Schwartz, and the quick recovery time is great because that pretty much means that he will be back for the 2021 season, which means the Chiefs have their answer most likely at right tackle, depending on what he looks like once he gets back and kind of, you know, in the flow of things. But I think it's safe to assume that he'll probably go in and start at right tackle. And look, he didn't play to the level that we've seen Mitchell Schwartz play for a good amount of this last season, but he was also probably dealing with a lot of pain.
Yeah.
Back injuries are no joke. And
especially at lineman.
But if he even comes back and is like 90% of what the old Mitchell Schwartz was, the Chiefs are in a pretty good spot having him at right tackle. Plus, when you factor in the experience that he brings, that's huge for this team.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the best right tackles in the league. I mean, hands down, bar none. So even if he comes back and he's just a really good tackle in this league, you know, top 10, top 15, I'll take it. Really, I don't think he's going to drop below top 15 tackles. So as long as he can just come in and do his job, have the same leadership on the line, that's, I mean, I would much rather take a 90% or 85% Mitchell Schwartz than an unknown. Or, you know, obviously we have Lucas Niang kind of waiting in the wings, still not really sure what he can do because he opted out last season. So I would much rather put my faith in an 85% Mitchell Schwartz with a back surgery that might not be able to play up to the same, you know, Pro Bowl caliber he has the past couple of years. But as long as he can be a lockdown, solid starting right tackle, I think that's better than nothing. Better than the unknown, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think that's what – totally. And I think that is what they'll get. The big question then is, well, what do they do at the left tackle position? Eric Fisher will likely not return until late in the season because of the Achilles injury, which is just brutal. But if you can anticipate getting him back closer to the end of the season, and again, it all depends on what type of player they are like when they come back from that injury. That's always the biggest unknown when players come back from pretty extensive injuries. But if he can come back and you know, step right in and be the same player, and you've got Schwartz and Fisher, you know, kind of bookending, you know, as the bookends of this Chiefs offensive line, well, then the Chiefs are in a pretty good spot. That said, Blake, I still think that the O-line needs to be addressed in this year's draft. And
oh, 100%.
A lot of fans saying this should have been something that they addressed more than they did in the draft last year. Of course, they take Lucas Niang out of TCU in the third round. He opted out. And that was the other thing. You know, when you look at the offensive line for the Chiefs and how things poorly progressed for them in the 2020 season, and by poorly progressed, I mean you could have never anticipated that LDT and Lucas Niang would both decide to opt out. Then you've got injuries to Kelechi Osemele, Eric Fisher, of course, later on in the season, but Mitchell Schwartz. They were just dealing with a lot. And, of course, this franchise wants to protect the franchise and Patrick Mahomes. They're going to do that. And you could argue that they did do that with the moves that they made going into the season. Things changed, and now they need to maybe protect themselves a little bit more than they did with even, I guess, more depth going into this season. So I know you've been watching some film. You've been looking at some possible players, some projections for who the Chiefs might pick. And just as a kind of, framework to work within here, here are the possible picks for the Chiefs in this year's draft. The first three rounds are set, but after that, things are, of course, subject to change once compensatory draft picks are officially announced. But the team is projected to earn two compensatory draft picks on day three of the draft. So they pick at 31 in round one, 63 in round two, and 95 in round three. And then from rounds four on, possibly 127 in round four, 159 in round five, and 223 in round seven. So somewhere, that's kind of loose there, but first three rounds, that's where their picks are. Blake, I personally am on team, which I was on this same team last year. I'm on team, trade out of the first round, get more draft capital, and just get more picks that might hit, don't put so much into, a first rounder that the difference in talent might be at 31 so slight that you could get two for the price of one.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
Deeper in the draft.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat that you are. I think if you trade out of the first round, you pick up an extra draft or two draft picks, especially hopefully for a higher second round pick possibly. I think especially if you're going to go lineman, unless you're top 15, I just think that there's so much depth at lineman, and really they're hit and miss. I mean, there's so many linemen that are third, fourth round guys, second round guys that are just studs in the league. I think it's kind of like picking a running back. You can trade out of the first round and still land an absolute all-star tackle, all-star guard, instead of, keeping that for, I don't think sitting at 31, you're going to be really missing out on something that isn't still going to be there at possibly 49, 52, 53, something around there. If we can get, if we can kind of pop back into the late 40s, early 50s, just depends on, who's obviously coming to the party to do a deal. But I would definitely trade out of the first round. Couple guys that I have been eyeing, and I would like to, I'd like to know your opinion on this. So, Ali, obviously, with the injury situation to our Mitchell Schwartz, to Eric Fisher, in your opinion, do you absolutely address the tackle position? Or if the best lineman available happens to be a guy who can play guard and center and play all three interior positions, what would you do? Do you think you would feel more comfortable absolutely sticking with tackle? Or do you pick the best lineman out there for your fit?
I think you take the best lineman, because something that I know, Andy Heck, Coach Reed have talked about, at times during media availability, is that they train and they practice with their linemen to be versatile and to be able to kind of fill in at different roles. So I think that you take the best lineman and you make sure they know how to do the job of tackle if it's a possibility for them at some point to feel comfortable enough to slide outside. I think in this situation, given that they are getting Mitchell Schwartz back, I think, of course, you draft a natural tackle. But if you're looking at what to do with maybe the first pick and the best offensive lineman on the board isn't a player who, spent their college career playing out at tackle, then you draft that player. That would just be
okay.
What I would think. Just because of how things have changed and, the versatility that is required of the offensive line position.
So I think I would agree. Especially because we don't know right now if Kelechi Osemele is going to be in the equation this upcoming season. I don't know if they've decided, you know, already behind closed doors, hey, we're going to part ways, or if, you know, I think, you know, obviously he, to me, looked fantastic when he was playing. It just obviously he's had some injury issues. I don't know if we're going to be able to bring him back. Also, we are kind of up in the air. We don't know if LDT is officially coming back. I would assume he is, but, you know, obviously fighting the front line with the good fight against the old C-19 out there, you know, he's really kind of up in the air as well. So, taking those two guards out of play, I think you're right. I think you have to draft the best available lineman on the board, especially if they're versatile, being able to play inside both center and guard, or playing guard and being able to, you know, kind of being able to switch, like we've said. So, if that's the case, I've got two guys right now that I'm looking at. Ohio State guard Wyatt Davis, and my other guy, Alabama's Landon Dickerson. So, those okay. two both can play offensive guard and center. I think Dickerson's played a little bit more center than Wyatt Davis has. But to me, especially with Wyatt Davis, they, to me, look like some very solid guys, especially with the zone run scheme that the Chiefs run. These are some guys that I've seen. To me, Wyatt Davis, very good hands, good initial pop when he comes off the ball. You know, he is 6'4", 315 pounds, very solid build at guard. I mean, he looks like an NFL guard. He does a very good job of getting up to the second level, getting hands on linebackers. The only thing that I kind of saw with him is sometimes maybe, and you know, I couldn't really tell from the film I watched how deep in the game they were at some points, how tired he might've been, but sometimes it doesn't look like he's always going 100% every single play. From the ones I saw, obviously, when you watch highlight films is they should all be highlights. You know, you're not going to see you're not going to see the mistakes as much. Yeah. So from what I got to see,
right.
he looks very versatile. He can play both guard positions. He gets to the second level very good. He gets his hand and he understands body leverage. My only thing is maybe sometimes he doesn't finish when he should. Other than that, he was an absolute. I think he's one of the best guards in the draft, as well as moving over to Landon Dickerson. Landon Dickerson's a monster. He's 6'6", 325, and his arms are bigger than my thighs. I mean, they're massive. Obviously, playing for Alabama, you know they're going to have a good run game. He does great getting his hands on people, dominant. He finishes blocks, so and got really good strength. So those two guys right now for me are very solid picks if you're going some of the best candidates on the board. He was a Remington Trophy winner and first-team All-American. Remington Trophy, obviously, huge accomplishment for an offensive lineman in this past 2020 season. Going back over to Wyatt Davis, he was first-team All-Big – I'm sorry. First-team All-Big – I'm sorry. I got three different pages up here now looking at him. But either way, he was somebody that could come in and I think make an impact. He was a Remington Pace Offensive Lineman of the Year Award and unanimous All-American. That's what I was looking for. Sorry. So very decorated in the Buckeye system. Now, you talked about maybe getting a tackle as well. Obviously, that's the big need. We have Lucas Niang. Still don't know really what to do with him. I still remember us last year talking about Lucas Niang with Sterling on the show. I was very impressed by his college tape. So as long as he's kept up a good offseason workout, as long as he's kept in touch with the team, as far as just, you know, staying conditioned, staying working out, trying to really learn the playbook, I still have a lot of optimism with what I saw from him just from his college film. We obviously didn't get to see him in preseason, so that's unfortunate. But I think somebody else that the Chiefs could definitely go out and get is Texas offensive tackle Samuel Cosmi. Cosmi, to me, looks great. He's big. He kind of reminds me of Mitchell Schwartz in a way. He's 6'7", 309 pounds, first-team All-Big 12 selection for Texas. He's super athletic. You know, he's actually, for being 6'7", he's actually, you know, pretty slim for being 309 pounds. Does a very good job of getting to the second level. Does a good job of finishing. So I like the fact that he can get his hands in places when he does. Because he is a little tall, he has sometimes a little bit of an issue. Especially, I don't know how it's going to translate as well to the NFL, but you got to be able to get your pads low. So being that tall, we got to make sure he can drop his butt down. But the thing that I think sticks out to me that will make him a good offensive lineman is that he was also a wrestler. And wrestlers understand body leverage and just dropping down, being able to get leverage on people a lot better than somebody who didn't. It's just knowing what your body can do and what it can't, and especially being a former wrestler, it translates so well to the football field. So,
did he wrestle in college?
So that's what I was looking at.
But he has the wrestling experience.
He has wrestling experience. I know he definitely wrestled in high school. I don't think he wrestled in college.
But still, like that, you would imagine. I mean, it's like being a multi-sport athlete, right? It's like Patrick
exactly.
Mahomes and his experience playing baseball and basketball. You know, yeah.
And he has the ability to play either tackle position. He's played both right and left. So again, adding kind of to that same package of swing players, the versatility.
Huge.
Exactly. That I think that's going to be what you're looking for. Guys that can play both positions, because we know, especially this past season on the offensive line, we need guys that can play everywhere. I mean, Mike Rimmers played everything mm-hmm. but center, and they probably almost asked him to do that too.
Yeah, and not just play everywhere, but play, you know, whatever role they're needed in at a high level. And I think that that's something, you know, when you look at the offensive line that the Chiefs put out in the Super Bowl, it was very clear that, you know, they got hurt, though, by the injuries. They got hurt by not having LDT, Lucas Niang, Kelechi Osemele going down with that injury, which I do think that the Chiefs could bring him back, you know, on, like, the veteran minimum. I think that they could work out a deal. I don't know what the market would be like for a player like Osemele at his age and the fact that he was out all season for the most
yeah.
part with a pretty significant injury. So I do think that the Chiefs, if nothing but for and I mean, we heard his press conference when the Chiefs first brought him in. He was thrilled to be playing with Patrick Mahomes. I would imagine a player like that would be more inclined to figure out a deal with the Chiefs than to try and hit the market and see what's out there for him.
Yeah. And,
so I think the Chiefs
and weirdly enough,
bring back
if you I follow him on Twitter and on Instagram, he always interacts with other players on social media. And to me, that just shows that he's actually made a good transition into the locker room. He's got a good presence. He's friendly with the guys, and he's always commenting on their stuff. So to me, that would make me think that he does want to come back. He's building relationships with these guys. You know, it's not every day that you just go out and comment on all your teammates' stuff. Now, obviously, you know, teammates are teammates, but you just don't see that as much. So that was something that kind of stuck out to me. So obviously getting him back would be huge. Another thing, kind of going back to what Osemele does really well and what all three of these guys do, Dickerson, Cosme, and Davis, all three of them are very good run blockers. Now, they're good in the pass as well. Cosme's a great pass tackle as well, but they are all exceptional run blockers. And I think that is something that obviously every Chiefs fans know we've been missing for quite a while, is just a solid run blocker. So
yeah.
To have somebody like that be able to come in, and any one of those guys can come in and make a good punch in the run game next to Osemele, who's also an elite run blocker, really, that would be huge, especially when you got Clyde Edwards-Helaire back there really itching to get the ponies out and see what he can do this upcoming season.
Yeah, absolutely. Love it. Hey, Blake, before we take a break and get ready for hour number two, quick question. J.J. Watt to the Chiefs. Does it happen? Does it not? He talking about tweeting potential teammates, tweeting current teammates, him and Patrick Mahomes interacting on Twitter.
Him and Patrick Mahomes, Chris Jones giving him a big shout-out, and he didn't really respond to that as much. But obviously, I would love to see it. Also, J.J. Watt's one of those guys. He's made his money for so long in the league. He would also take a pay cut to win a Super Bowl. Not saying it's going to happen, not trying to get my hopes up, but I think it would be absolutely dominant to have J.J. Watt, Frank Clark, and Chris Jones all on that D-line. Obviously, it's going to be, you know, you've got your thing, you got your issues with free agency and everything, you got your issues with, he might want to go play with his other two brothers up in Pittsburgh. I completely understand that. It'd also be a scheme change for him going from a 3-4 to a 4-3.
Yeah.
So, obviously, mm-hmm. odds are probably slim to none, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs actually do make some sort of an offer at J.J. Watt.
In Veach we trust. And we don't have time to play the clip, but Whit Merrifield talked this week about how great it will be having fans back and how that helps with the momentum. If there's one team that might benefit from that, I think it's Kansas City.
I can't wait either. I think it's going to be awesome. I think the Royals are gonna actually surprise a lot of people, and I can't wait to put my butt in that seat and watch some baseball.
Give me a hot dog. Okay, we'll be back after this on Sports Saturday.